Thank you for listening to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. Larry Suttle, the preaching minister of over 20 years, weekly instructs and encourages those attending the services at the 10th and Broad Church of Christ in Wichita Falls, Texas. Let's join Larry now for this week's lesson.
In this past Friday's newspaper, I read of Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel's visit to Warren Air Force Base, one of the centers of the nation's Minuteman III missile headquarters, where that base in Wyoming and then another base in Montana, the Malmstrom Air Force Base, where they have charge of the ICBM intercontinental ballistic missile in the strategic defense system of this country. And I've been reading about this for several months now, how that one of the main officers in charge of this entire area has complained that there has become in the whole system a rot, as he has described it, infesting the missile force, as the people involved in the actual charge of having their finger on the button of the missile defense system. I mean, they are the ones who would be responsible for actually launching a nuclear weapon, are involved in drug involvement, boredom, just consider themselves of little consequence and thus very low morale, very lackadaisical, and as the newspaper article Associated Press said, increasingly tired of working in what can seem like oblivion on the plains of Wyoming and Montana. And I quote, they win no battles, earn no combat pay, and only rarely are given public credit of any kind. And so Secretary of Defense Hagel traveled out there just this week to tell them, you are doing something of great importance to the world. Lest they sometimes doubt that importance, he said, you have chosen a profession where there is no room for error. None, he emphasized. Well, I hope that makes you feel better this morning. And another interesting thing I read this week that sort of piqued my interest, according to a Gallup poll taken last year, 2013, their annual poll, State of the American Workplace, a survey of American workers, of the approximately 100 million people in America who hold full-time jobs, 50% are disengaged, or what Gallup described as kind of present, but not inspired by their work or their managers. And 20% are actively disengaged. Actively disengaged. Only 22% of U.S. employees are engaged and thriving. And Gallup estimates that actively disengaged employees, that actively disengaged employees cost between $450 to $550 billion a year, because disengaged employees are more likely to steal from their companies, negatively influence their coworkers, miss work days, and drive customers away. And you've met them, haven't you? probably this week. Now, lest you become totally discouraged about the state of the American worker, Tim Keller, who was mentioned on our screen this morning, a person I enjoy reading, he is a preacher in Manhattan, tells about Mike, one of 15 doormen serving in a large Manhattan co-op. His apartment building is home to about 100 families. Now in his early 60s, Mike immigrated to the U.S. from Croatia as a young man and worked in many kinds of jobs, from the restaurant business to manual labor. He has been a doorman in the building for 20 years and is clearly distinctive in his attitude toward his work. To Mike, it's far more than just a job. He cares about the people in the building and takes pride in helping with loading, finding parking spaces, and welcoming guests. He sets the standard for keeping the lobby and front of the building clean and attractive. When asked what makes him drop what he's doing to get to the curb in time to help unload a resident's car after a weekend away, he responds, "That's my job. They needed help." Why does he remember the name of every child? Because they live here. At one point, to the question, "But why do you work so hard at every part of this job?" he replied, "I don't know. It's just what I need to be able to look at myself in the mirror in the morning. I couldn't live with myself if I didn't try my best every day." He appears to work out of gratefulness for the job and for his life. He is glad to be in this country and for the opportunities it has given him. Most of the people Mike serves are professionals or business people who are probably glad not to be a doorman. Some might even find the work of a doorman demeaning if they had to do it themselves. But Mike's attitude shows that he recognizes the inherent dignity of the work he is doing. And in this, he brings out its goodness and worth. All of these little things that piqued my interest just this week just demonstrated to me and illustrated to me the importance of the individual. The most elaborate plans, I don't care how minutely and precisely worked out in the most well-trained mind or group of minds, it all comes down to an individual. And maybe the most lowly individual. Another illustration, Edward Snowden. The entire security of this nation came down to one little dropout in Utah who shouldn't have even been hired. As the preacher of this congregation, I don't know how many times I have been interviewed for people wanting jobs in this government. People being investigated. And I've answered the questions to the best of my knowledge. And I would have assumed that people would have investigated Edward Snowden more, even more, than for any other job I can imagine if he had access to all of that information. But this one little weak link has more information, I guess, yet to share that will put millions of people in jeopardy. And I don't care what you think about him. I know what I think about him. I think he's a traitor to this country. It all comes down to one individual. And we read these haunting words in Scripture. After he had said this, Jesus was troubled in spirit and testified, "I tell you the truth, one of you is going to betray me." His disciples stared at one another, at a loss to know which of them he meant. One of them, the disciple whom Jesus loved, was reclining next to him. Simon Peter mentioned to the disciple and said, "Ask him which one he means." Leaning back against Jesus, he asked him, "Lord, who is it?" Jesus answered, "It is the one to whom I will give this piece of bread when I have dipped it in the dish." Then, dipping the piece of bread, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, son of Simon. As soon as Judas took the bread, Satan entered into him. "What you are about to do, do quickly," Jesus told him. But no one at the meal understood why Jesus said this to him. Since Judas had charge of the money, some thought Jesus was telling him to buy what was needed for the feast or to give something to the poor. As soon as Judas had taken the bread, he went out. And it was night. Night can be turned into day by a single person. Winston Churchill saved Britain during World War II. One man saved Britain. Abigail Josephine Jackson saved 2013 for me. I tell you, when December 31st rolled around for old Larry Suttle, I said, "Let's put this turkey to bed." It hadn't been a good year for me. And then I thought, well, let's see though. July 31st, Abby Jo was born. Well, you know what? That just saved the whole year. A little baby saved the whole year. It's amazing, isn't it? A single voice of hope, of optimism, of unity can save a whole church. It can. Never underestimate the value, the importance of you. The health of the whole church is dependent on the health of you. The spiritual health of you. The spiritual vitality of you. Now that's what Paul was getting at in 1 Corinthians 12, 12 and forward. Listen to what he wrote to the church in Corinth. The body, that is the church body, is a unit. We are a unit. We talk about the 10th and Broad Church. That's because we are a unit. Though, Paul wrote, it is made up of many parts. And though all its parts are many, they form one body. So it is with Christ. For we were all baptized by one Spirit into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, slave or free. Then you go on down to verse 21. The eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. And the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And the parts that we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor. Verse 26, if one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it. Now you are the body of Christ, and each one of you is a part of it. Why is that? Because the body is a unit, though made up of many individual parts. But the emphasis must be placed on you. Now we are concerned, obviously, about the corporate body. And many meetings are devoted to the corporate body. Elders meet hours every month. The staff meets every week. And we discuss the corporate body because we are concerned. Things that are obvious to you are obvious to us. And we wrestle with them. We discuss them. And for those things, there are easy answers. We deal with them. For those things, there are no easy answers. It takes a little longer. But we deal with the corporate body quite a bit. But the real answers we know lie with the individuals within the body. The individuals who will engage, who will step forth to lead, and maybe even to repent. Sometimes it takes that. And if those things don't happen, then we can't go forward. Ken Holsberry said it a long time ago. He'd have people come to him, say, we sure need this kind of ministry. If we had this ministry, we know we'd just take off. But he said, we've learned a long time ago, if we don't have a person to lead that ministry, we can have no ministry. We can say we have a ministry, but if there's no person to lead it, if there's no person that has a heart for it, then we don't have a ministry. I agree with that. The answer lies with the individual. It always has, and it always will. So, the emphasis in our life group discussion last week, after our presentation of the elders and the staff, was on you. On you. And here was the question number 4 on the list of the discussion questions that hopefully was discussed last Sunday night. How do you think God has gifted or equipped you to fulfill His mission or vision through 10th and Broad? Where do you see yourself in the mission, vision statement? What interests or excites you that possibly has not even been suggested as an undertaking of this church? Do you have a dream for 10th and Broad? Could God have put that dream in your heart and mind? What should your next step be for the dream to become reality? Let's now pray that we join God's story in 2014. Well, I put that at the last of the discussion questions, and so it was given little time. It was probably foolish of me to make that the last question because time was up and people had to go get their kids and that kind of thing. And maybe a group discussion is not the best setting anyway for such a personal thing. Maybe when you're talking about you, maybe it just needs to be something that it's only between you and God. So maybe that's something that you need to talk about out on the side of a creek with a fishing pole or something, not in a group setting. But it's the crucial question. It really is. Our questions, not what the church is going to do. And certainly not what are they going to do down there. But what am I going to do? And I might give this as a for instance, just as sort of a commercial, though I hate to cheapen it in that way, but it's just a good time to insert it. During the month of February, and Ted mentioned this last week, we're going to give every family unit in the church this little book. It has four chapters in it. And each family unit is asked to, as a family, read one chapter a week. And then, in addition to reading it, pray as a family about the contents of that chapter, about what it said. Pray that the Lord open your heart to what it said, if it's biblical, and help you to do what it says, if it comes from the Lord. And of course, it's about our giving to the Lord, because our financial commitments begin the next month in March, our fiscal year. But rather than just scribbling down a figure on the pledge card the next month on the basis of what has been done the previous month or the previous year, to give some real thought to it on the basis of prayer and study. But the idea is you make it an individual thing. But this principle I'm trying to convey this morning deals with every aspect of our work. We all worry about attendance, for instance. Well, what is your attendance pattern? Your regularity with attendance? I know people are worried about this ministry or that ministry. But what is your availability? Your dependability? Your consistency in a ministry? Someone says, well, no one has ever asked me to be on a ministry. Waiting for someone to recruit you. Well, the talent surveys that were passed out, I'll just share this with you, are now being inputted into our church software program, which is new to us and much better than anything we've had before. So we will be able to access it better than we've ever been able to access any of that kind of information before. So you can run, but you can't hide now. I mean, we can grab that information much better now than we've ever been able to access it before. So we'll be better at that now than we have been before. But in addition to that, you know, really you don't need to be asked. If you see a need, convey that need to staff or elders or just anyone that might be of interest to help you or just get it going. The bench is not real deep, and so I almost guarantee you there's a need. And I realize that, and I don't do this often, but I just feel the compulsion to mention some specific people this morning who just stand and sort of, I think, set the gold standard for involvement. One is sort of a generic group. I think about our military folks who just consistently come in, and I think they know they have to because they are moved around so often that they know if they're to be involved in a church, they just got to jump in there, and they do so brilliantly. And I just love our military families and just couldn't do without them. And when they say we're being moved away, I just anguish over it. But Megan and Chris Bradford, I see them sitting out before me and just appreciate them so much. And the Schmitz, Jim and Sherry, coming from this little town in Oklahoma and coming to this much larger congregation. And I guess they just didn't know any better, coming from this little Oklahoma church. And they just didn't realize that they were supposed to be recruited. They just didn't realize that you weren't supposed to hang back. And so they just stepped forward and started doing things and started, Jim started visiting even though he had health problems. And Sherry started doing things and coming to ladies' class. And then their daughter and son-in-law moved, and they pretty much followed in those same steps. And now Jonathan is our new maintenance guy, and the one guy who can change a light bulb without a ladder. You know, he's a very valuable guy. And I realize there are many others who could be mentioned who kind of set gold standards, but these just come to mind because I'm looking at them. Please be like that. We're a family here. And don't think you have to jump through hoops or go through a lot of formalities. Just be available. This is the Lord's work. It's not the elder's work. It's not my work. This is your work. If you're a member of the Lord's body, this is your work. And you're needed. You're needed drastically. You're needed to engage, to step forward, to lead, to make a difference in the short time you have on this earth. And you don't have any idea what a time frame you have. It may be short or long. You just don't know. But one of these days you're going to stand before the Lord in judgment. And if Jesus taught anything, it's going to be that you're going to give account of what you did. And you don't want to have to stand before him and say, well, Lord, I was just waiting for that perfect time. I was just waiting for old Larry to ask me. I was just waiting for the elders to ask me. I was just waiting for all my kids to get situated. And then I promised I was going to do something. I was going to do something great. Look to yourself. Look to yourself. The Lord demands it. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, Who do people say the Son of Man is? And they replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. But what about you? He asked, who do you say I am?